Hello and welcome to another edition of Cine Critique. My name is Shane A. Bassett, your host, the movie analyst, and I am very accessible. You can find me on social media at movie_analyst. You can even email me a question, a theory, whatever you want about movies. ShaneAdamBassett@gmail.com. And today's edition of Cine Critique involves the Welder and, well, for a start, the Welder is an indie film. Do you have Tubi, whatever you want to call it? I guess being an Australian, you can call it Tubi. You can call it Tubi. But it has a lot of great films. It is a streaming service that includes a movie called The Welder, directed by David Liz, and starring Vincent DePaul, Roe Dunkley, among others, including Camila Rodriguez. And you are about to hear an amazing interview, an open interview with Camila Rodriguez, who is the lead in this extraordinary indie film. It's much better than you may think. It has some, not reservations about the plot, but you kind of don't know where it's going. But then when it does get where it's going, you go, should it have made it there or not? Either way, Camila Rodriguez is amazing. She's going to skyrocket to stardom before you know it. She has talent, she's gorgeous, and she is humble. Enjoy this interview.
Once upon a time there was a tavern where we used to raise a glass or two. Remember how we laughed away the hours and think about the great things we.
Hi, Shane from Miami.
Do you have a middle name?
Well, Camila is my middle name. Oh, my first name, yes, my first name is Angie with an E, like Angie, yeah, but with an E instead. So it's Angie Camila. Yeah. So
Camila is your stage name.
Yeah, I find it easier to people to remember Camila instead of Angie, because then they call me Angie and then it's not with an A and it's with an E and then people are confused. So it was easier to just say Camila and people quite remember easily.
Well, I think when people see your movie, The Welder, they're going to remember you anyway.
Oh, you're so sweet. Thank you so much.
I'll talk a little bit about that shortly. But first, I want to ask you a little bit about your heritage. Where you're from, what's your background? You've always lived in Miami?
So I'm originally from Colombia, Bogota, yep. Colombia. I moved to Miami around in 2005.
Yep.
And I have been living here since then. I'm here with my mom and everybody else pretty much is in Colombia. My brother is in Australia. And yeah.
So your brother's down under, but I'm near Sydney. He's down in Melbourne at the moment. So a bit different.
Correct. Correct. Yeah.
Now, I also want to say that David obviously picked you from seeing you in another movie. How did you get the part? Did he ring you and you have to audition, or how did you get the role in The Welder?
Well, yes, he did tell me that he saw me in another movie that was featuring in a Miami Film Festival. When was it? 2019. And he contacted me. He said that he has a part for me for his movie.
Yep.
I was really excited. Funny, I almost didn't do it because I'm also a nurse.
Mm.
So I wasn't going to be able to take 2 weeks off for shooting. I thought it was going to be impossible. And, you know, I didn't want to commit to something that I wasn't really going to be able to do. And then he said, just come to the casting. Just come. It's fine. We'll figure it out. Just come to the casting and see how it goes. So I went. I remember going to the casting. I did my casting. And I remember after the casting, he kept talking to me about the character and the Elisa and this and that and the movie. And I'm like, okay. It felt like I was it. I was like, David, are you, did I get it? Yeah. And he's like, yeah, if you want it. So everything came out. It was meant to be, because I was able to be off of work.
Yeah.
We made it happen. And that's how we came to work together.
Well, it's quite an emotional character that you play. And she sleepwalks. Do you sleepwalk in real life? Have you ever done that?
I don't know. I wouldn't know.
That's true.
I don't think nobody's told me that I've had it. I do talk in my sleep. I did. At least I used to talk in my sleep, but I don't know anymore. Fair so enough. Yeah.
Was it hard to bring out emotional, because you were crying? It was raining in that opening scene. And there's so many different layers to your character. Was it hard to get into?
That first scene that you're talking about was the last scene that we shot of the whole production. So I was very, I felt a lot of emotion through all those days of shooting. So I knew more or less what the character was feeling through all those days. So
yeah.
The rain was a coincidence, by the way. We used it because it worked, and it goes also hand to hand with the flashback.
Right.
And Dave was like, you want to walk in the rain? I'm like, please, let's use the rain, of course. And it just, I don't know how to explain when I get into these emotions. I don't particularly use method acting, for example. I it's just like I put myself in the character's shoes, and I just I just try to be present in the moment of that character in that specific moment. And yeah, that's how it came out to me.
Well, your character changes as well, and I mean we can do spoilers, because hopefully people are watching the movie, have already seen the movie before they watch this interview. Something happens at the end that I was not expecting. Wow. Like, that was incredible. You became the welder.
Big spoiler, yes. Well, you're not expecting it. It's awesome to hear that. Yeah. I wasn't expecting it either when I read the whole the script. I was like, oh, I like this. I like this a lot. I like that I don't ended up, you know, like I take control of the whole situation.
Yeah. It's a horror movie, but it's also a bit of a suspense, a thriller, a mystery. Do you like horror movies and scary movies in general?
Shane, I can't lie. I don't. I am terrified of horror movies. Wow. I can't do it. I just like get too. It gives me a lot of anxiety. A lot of like the suspense gives me a lot of anxiety. Mm. I think that the only movie, that I really saw, it wasn't a horror movie, but it was a thriller, was The Silence of the Lambs. I was just like, yes. And I was very young when I saw it, so I don't know if it was appropriate for me to have seen it. So that was the one that almost did. And I also I did like Chucky growing up.
Child's Play, yeah, right.
You know, and then I was terrified of Freddy Krueger. So I'm not a good horror audience. I can act and do millions of horror movies, but to watch movies, horror movies, I am not a good person for that. No.
Well, you can act. I agree. You're a good actor. You're also, as you said, you're a nurse. So you've got to juggle the both jobs. Why did you become an actor? Was it something that you were interested in? You started doing short films?
Well, I've always wanted to be an actor. I was very shy when I was little.
Yeah.
It was kind of a secret until I was 18 years old, and I kind of like, you a know, secret. I remember in high school. Yes, I remember in high school. I had this, you know, I was supposed to study medicine, and I just didn't. I wasn't committed to do so much of medicine, of something I didn't want to do. Then I switched for nursing and this whole thing, right? And then I just kept wanting to be an actor. I had never done that before, but I just had this feeling that I just wanted to act and act and act and act. And I came out to my mom around 18, because I randomly, with the allowance that was left for my for the financial aid in college, I ended up paying like $800 for a class, and my mom was like, "What are you doing? Like, why are you really seriously gonna, you know?" Where it's not like we have money or anything like that. I just like didn't even think about it, and that's when we had the talk, and she was like, "Is this, you want to be an actor? Like, what are you?" Because I also come from a Latin family that is conservative and very focused in education and profession. Sure.
Yeah.
So for my family, was like, "What do you mean she wants to be an actor? What are you talking about?" So it was a little bit of a little hassle there. It was difficult at the time. But then I went to college. I never thought I was going to be an actress. I never thought it was going to be possible to even, never in my life I would have imagined to be actress in a film. Never. It just like, believe that what's for you, it's for you. What's meant to be, it's going to happen no matter what. And life kept giving me like this little signs. Even when I was in nursing school, I got a scholarship to study acting at night.
Yeah.
And I lied to my mom, said that I had like late studying, so it was Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursdays, and I would go to nursing school, and I would go Tuesdays and Thursdays to acting school.
Very dedicated.
Oh yes, it's always been my passion. And then my mom said, you know, like, finish, when I went to nursing school, I almost didn't, because here you have to do like 2 years of college and then 3 years of, you do 2 years of college and then you move to your profession. When I was done with college, I had decided not to go to nursing school anymore. And I told my mom, and then she's like, "You know what? It's like," she said, "it's only 3 more years. Just give me the title, give me the diploma. And then after that, you do whatever you want with your life." And thanks to her, I did finish my nursing career, which I'm very, very grateful that I did. I love my job so much. I'm a labor and delivery nurse. So amazing. I love it. I love my job so much. It gives me the opportunity to balance both, because I work 12-hour shifts. So I have more days off to go do castings and theater and switch my days with my coworkers. Everybody's been super supported at work. Everybody knows that I'm an actress, and that's what I am aiming to do.
So it's not a secret.
All
your work colleagues know.
Not anymore. Not anymore. Everybody knows now. So then, when I finished nursing school, I right away started doing theater, and that's how I began acting with theater.
Oh, I'm so stoked. I think you've got a lot of range, and I mean, there's scenes in The Welder where you're with Ro, your co-star, and you have great chemistry. What was it like working with him?
It was awesome. It was really good. We had a good time. We listened to each other. We helped each other. It was very easygoing. So that was good to have a co-star that way. Yeah.
And you filmed it in Florida. It would have been very hot. How did you cope with the heat while you were acting?
It was around August 2019, and it was so, usually July and August in Miami, it's like an oven. So I am very good with hot weather, even though I come from a city which is very cold. Bogota is super cold. I mean, cold compared to what I think it's cold, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't so bad when we were outside. The house that we filmed the movie, it's like this 100-year-old house that had no AC in the second floor, and the scenes that we did upstairs, that was really difficult. The closet scenes and all that, it was like, it was an oven. We had to take we have to take breaks to get outside and then have some bread and air, and then come back and do it again. But that was part of the whole process. I enjoyed every single moment that we were there.
Do you think there'll be The Welder 2? Are you going to return?
Well, that's what David says. So I hope so. I would love to see what Elisa will do and how she would, like, how, yeah, what's going to happen to her, you know, like, what is she going to do after becoming the welder? It's like, I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting to see what the plot will be. But if he's willing to do another one, like, please, yes, well, I'll do it.
Elisa could have medical knowledge and then move on to bigger things, maybe.
That, maybe you can be part of the writing team.
do you do writing yourself or take notes or do diaries when you're working?
No, not really. I'm more of a visual person. So what I do, I print images about the emotions of the character. I like to see images and focus on different type of images according to what the character is dealing with.
Yeah.
And I use a lot of music too to get into the mood. Writing, I just began actually writing diary, but I'm not a consistent writer. Mm. Okay. Yeah.
Well, you could always write some things confidentially about your medical, your nursing job, and you know, turn that into a movie, even.
I could, because what I see every day, it's tons, millions. It's my source of research. All my mommies, I love it because then you see so much. And my hospital, it's awesome because we have so much. We have a big demographic mommies.
Yeah, yeah.
So we have everyone coming to this hospital. It's a public hospital. So we have moms from everywhere, no English. You know, we have all types of moms, and it's awesome to be able to see them. And really, I think one of the things, I don't know if all the actors, something happens, you know, like the actors do this, but we tend to like observe people a lot and see how they become with, you know, news and moments and frustrations and all these things. So, yeah.
How many languages can you speak?
Well, I speak Spanish. That's my first language. And I barely speak English. And
don't say that. And, I can understand you. And you could understand you so Elisa in the movie.
Oh, my God. Thank you. So I am very self-conscious about my accent and my English. I think it's better now than it was when I did the welder.
Yeah.
But you know, it's okay. It's okay. Now I'm aiming to learn French and see if that's the case. I feel more confident that I have two languages in my brain. And so I'm like, maybe another language can go in.
Well, listen to me. I've got this Australian accent and some people probably can't understand me either.
Oh no, it's perfect. It's perfect.
Now you mentioned music before. David did mention that on set you were listening to music before your scenes. What sort of music were you listening to get pumped up to?
I mainly listened to instrumental music. Okay. So because it was such a heavy scenes and heavy emotions, I like to like look for either mysterious instrumental music, sad instrumental music, piano, exciting music. And so that way I focus on the music and not the lyrics. Yep. You know, like if I listen to lyrics, then it's not the same if I just go into the instrumental.
Can you sing or play a musical instrument?
Just in the shower when nobody's listening to me, that's when I can sing. But I do have a tendency. I love singing though. Like I wish I knew how to sing to be in musicals because I love musicals and theater. Yep. So both combined is like my dream. I feel like I could, you know, I don't sound so bad, but I'm very shy with my singing. I do not sing in public. But I love singing, but I don't sing in public. No.
Well, I look forward one day to hearing you sing, you know, maybe in a short film or a musical. I think that'd be great.
Oh my God. That would be great. Let's visualize that, please. That'll be amazing.
Well, what's up next for you? Have you got any productions or any projects you can share with me?
Right now, you know, that's the life of an actor. You do a project and you're kind of like, so what do I do now? Like, what's next? And that's, you know, it's funny because people keep asking me, so what's next? What's the next gig? And sometimes there's nothing, and you're like, you know, something will come up. But I'm auditioning a lot. I'm working. I started taking classes for improv. So yes. I just began taking improv classes, which is something that I've been wanting to do and put off for many years because I'm terrified of improv. So I'm finally like stepped in and then so like let me just do it and see how that would help me be a better actor.
It will, because for someone who says you're shy, improv, you've just got to like think fast. Is it fun?
Yes.
Like, what do? Do you stand on stage and have to just talk amongst yourselves, or how does it work with improv?
So yeah, you go on stage without knowing what you're gonna do. We're learning different techniques. One of them is like they give you a subject, like an object, even like a vacuum cleaner.
Yep.
And then you come up with a story about vacuum cleaning, and then you know, you usually have a partner, a couple of other actors on stage, and then you just whatever comes into your mind, you just do it.
Wow.
You don't even think about it. So it's really fun and liberating for sure. So
no,
I'm really
no,
happy
I'll just go, yeah,
and excited that I'm doing this.
So that means you might be in a comedy then one day.
Well, I would love to. I mean, that's also why I was putting off improv, because I did, mm-hmm. I started with comedy. And I was very, I don't know, I had a lot of fun doing comedy. And then little by little, I just began doing very dramatic theater, classical theater, Shakespeare, and then Tartuffo and all these classic theater plays. And then the films kept coming to me as dramatic, and
yes.
and I'm always crying, and I'm always dying, and I'm always suffering. So for many years, I did that. And then I was like, so away from comedy that I was like, oh, maybe I can't do comedy anymore. Maybe I'm not good at it. Was I ever good? I don't know. I do remember one time I did take a sitcom class.
Okay.
When I began acting, and I remember the acting coach of that sitcom class, she told me, I think you should stick to drama. I think you should do sitcoms and
really?
Comedy. And that, I know, and that just stuck in my head. And I think that's why I was so afraid to go back to comedy and improv. But, you know, that's out of my head already, of course.
Good.
It's crazy how, you know, people can influence you and just change the way you think about yourself.
Definitely.
So that's done. And so, yeah, I'm excited. I would love to do a comedy. I would love to do a sitcom or a romantic comedy or something fun and light. I recently did get cast for a small role in a feature film. It's a TV host.
Yep.
And she's like ridiculous. She's this
cool
Latina TV host who is like all about herself and super mean, but on camera, she's like the love of the people. And I had the best time. I really enjoy comedy and just to have a good time, because when I'm in a very dramatic part, yep. I take it to like I just like it's draining all day long, because I have to like stay in the mood to be able to give it all and give it well.
Well, I can tell, because Elisa is so in the moment of what happens to her. She changes, comes across people, and I just love your acting with some of your co-stars. But then you switch, like I said, towards the end of the film. I mean, it's like there's three Elisas in one movie.
Oh, thank you. I never thought about it that way. Yeah, it's three Elisas. It's the Lisa at the beginning who's a little lost and in pain, and then the strong one, and then the one that takes control of the whole situation.
I was waiting for an alligator to turn up too. I mean, there was no alligator, but there looked like there was one going to come out of the trees or something.
It always looks in Miami that there's an alligator coming after you. Like there's always, there's the habitat, the weather, the palms, everything is for you to see that there's an alligator. No, thank God there was no alligators. A lot of mosquitoes, yes, but no alligators. Yeah.
What Latino actors or directors or have you admired over the, you know, have you grew up watching their films? Is there any actors that you love, your favorites?
Latino or
well any of them, but, you know, maybe Latino to begin with.
Well, I come from Colombia. We're very, we have a lot of pride into our novelas. So, you know, I grew up watching novelas, soap operas all the time. And there's this amazing actress, a Colombian actress. Her name is Cristina Omaña, which I loved seeing growing up. And I don't remember the other actress that I I used to love, but I love, you know, the Latina actresses. The actress that does Jane the Virgin, Gina Rodriguez. I love her. I love Salma Hayek, of course, because she brought to my life Frida Kahlo. I never knew about Frida Kahlo before I watched the movie. Love Penelope Cruz. Yes. So, you know, those are the ones that come in my mind right now. And directors, I'm not good with names, unfortunately. So directors, no, I don't know. I don't have any Latino directors. Oh, well, Guillermo del Toro, of course.
Oh, of course, yes.
You know, but I just I'm just hoping to be more exposed to more films and more professional projects for sure. To
well, I hope you
engage.
Do. Yeah, well, I think, have you had any hurdles along the way or problems because of your being a female or being a Latino background? I mean, things have changed, thankfully, but there's still problems. There's still problems behind the scenes sometimes. Have you had any problems in your career so far?
No, I think that what comes to my mind, it's I had a very thick accent, like it was very thick, and then so I worked on that a lot because my idea, you see, my grandma has this saying, my grandma used to say, you make plans and God laughs at you, like you can really make any plans because it's like it's not in control. And when I started acting, I wanted to be a Spanish Latina actor. I just never imagined doing it in English. And it never happened. It was so cliquey. It was like, you know, it was just very difficult what they were asking of me. It wasn't like substantial. It wasn't like something with substance. Right. And then Huracan, the movie that David saw me for the first time, that was my first time that I was kind of introduced into the English industry.
Yes.
You know, and that in that movie, I realized, maybe I should focus my energy into the English side of acting and follow that path and just hit a goal with English and it's more, you know, it's where it's the best. So that's what I started doing. And it problems? No, I mean, I don't think I've had any. It's just my English, maybe. I mean, I'm typecast as a Latina. It's okay. I don't mind it at all. I am, as a matter of fact, Latina. I look Latina. I speak with an accent. So I use it in my benefit. I will portray anything you want me to portray. And of course, I'm always going to be a Latina. And that's totally fine with me, you know.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to improve my accent and you know, and see what happens. And I'm so glad that David gave me the opportunity to lead his movie.
Yeah.
And something he said that I will never forget is that, you know, you to me, you're not like a Latina actor. You're just a girl who went to the army and just happens to be Latina. And then, you know, what happened to you? So that was like, oh, thank you so much. It wasn't like I wasn't cast because I was Latina looking, you know. So that was very, very, very nice.
Well, I'm glad David cast you, and I'm sure he's going to cast you again because this movie is going to be popular, I think. Word will get around that The Welder is a good one to choose to watch. Any final words on why people should watch it in your words, your opinion?
I just want people to have fun. I just want people to enjoy the film.
And be scared as well.
And be scared. Yes, I know. Some of my friends that I've watched, I'm like, oh my God, it was so scary. It was so gory. It was very, it's weird to me because when it's not scary when I watch it, of course, because I did it. So it's a completely different experience if I see it, if I watch it, than my friends. So it's just to have a good time and to enjoy the film and to get scarier and you know, get the heartbeats fast and, you know, feel the emotions, feel the feels.
Well, it's an independent film, but it has a lot going for it. I mean, it was shot in a couple of weeks and you all were a very close bunch. You have some great acting skills, Camille.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it a lot. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
What do you, you're welcome always. And I think you're gorgeous as well. I think being looking, I mean, what is Latino looking? You look great and you could be anything. I mean, it just depends on your
Thank you so much.
Costumes.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's break stereotypes. Let's break frontiers and whatever. And let's do it. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's been a pleasure talking to you. But one final thing, what do you do outside of acting and working? I mean, if you're not being a nurse, if you're not acting on a set or auditioning or doing improv, what do you do for fun? Do you go surfing? Do you ride your bike?
I'm gonna show you right now. This is what I do. Let me see. Do you see it? Oh, it's blurry. Wait, hold on.
I'm excited.
Hold on. That's what I do.
Oh, sewing.
Yeah.
Oh, how cool.
That's what I do.
That was a big build-up. Yeah. It was all blurry and I didn't know what I was going to see.
Yeah. So I definitely have a love for, I just became a little bit obsessed with sewing. And I do that a lot. And I like to exercise and paint. I'm a very art crafty person. I need to do art crafts all the time too. I'm a creative person, I think, so I have to do it. And now sewing has been my latest love.
And sewing dresses, shirts, hats, what do you do? What's your specialty?
Oh, well, I'm learning so far, but I go to thrift stores a lot. So I tend to just buy cool stuff that I think I could fix for myself or fabrics or vintage fabrics that I can make things out of. So yeah, that's what I'm exploring right now, and I'm learning, and I love it. I love it. I love it so much.
And you said you liked Silence of the Lambs when you saw it, and you were probably too young, but Jodie Foster was amazing in that. And maybe write her a letter. She might want to co-star with you one day. Send her a copy of The Wilder.
Could you imagine that? That would be amazing.
How cool. Well, thank you very much for your time. I hope Australian audiences get to meet you sometime and you come down under. But your movies are only going to get better, and The Welder was terrific. So
thank you so much. Thank you. Thank you for the good energy, for the love, for the support. I so much appreciate it. It means not only the world to me, but to David and everybody involved in the film. So thank you, because David, of you and so many, like, you know, we can make this film seen by many.
I hope so. And David spoke very highly of you, because it was a surprise when I spoke to him. I had your questions ready. I had no questions for him, but
I got through
the interview. That's all
I
right.
I know. Let's a little. So people are like, is she too good for the interview? No. I was working, and then I didn't finish working, and I was freaking out. I was like, oh my God, I can't leave. I was in the clinic that day. I was like, David is my savior all the time when I can't make it.
Well,
and then he did it.
I'm
so happy. He's awesome. Isn't he amazing?
He's great. So are you.
He's awesome. Thank you so much. Thank you, Shane.
Well, there you go. She's pretty cool, Camila. What can I say? But if you're hanging on this long, you are about to hear the conversation between me and David Liz, the director. Why not? Why don't I connect it to this podcast? Camila is fantastic. She is a lead. It's, I believe, her first lead in this major motion picture. And I would call it a major motion picture because it is an indie. However, I think a lot of people are going to watch it. And it's exciting. It has two or three different, like, characters in one. I love it. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Camila, because she's so cool. She's going to be skyrocketing stardom before you know it, I am pretty sure. Now, same movie. This is the director. And you've got to remember that I was expecting to be talking to Camilla at this time, but no, the director filled in and this was all, well, I wouldn't say it was a improv, like it was an improv. It was just, well, yeah, okay, it was improv. I had no idea what I was talking and going to ask David, but, you know, he didn't know that. And it, well, not to the end anyway. I think I did okay. What do you think? Have a listen.
A good one. It's my pleasure to introduce to you David Liz. And hello from Australia.
Hello from Miami. Shane, thank you so much for having me here.
That's okay. Unforeseen circumstances. I was going to speak to you later on, but here we are right now. Miami, what's it like over there at the moment?
Oh, man, Miami. Well, if you come to Miami right now, it's kind of a beautiful time of year. It's about between 80 and 85 degrees most of the day. But this is the thing. This is the time of year that tricks people. It fools people. You come and visit this time of year and you think it's like this all the time. But if you were to visit just 2 months later, you start getting into hurricane season and like raining every single day. And then come December, you want it to be chilly and it's still 80 degrees. You know, every once in a while we get a cold front, but it's just a little too hot for me, if I got to be honest. I love it, but it is hot.
Well, it looked pretty hot in the locations that you made your movie, The Welder. But before that, I don't know what 85 degrees is.
Fahrenheit. Yeah.
Celsius here.
Yes, you're right. Well,
that's
we're going
right.
to have to do
it's probably about 30, 40.
yeah. That's homework for the audience. They got
to
look it up.
I like to know a little bit about people's backgrounds. So first, how did you become a director? Like your heritage, Latino, obviously.
Yeah.
And you grew up, did you love movies? Like how did you fall into directing and writing and so forth?
Oh, definitely. Shane, I think that's a great question. Since the time I was a little kid, I was obsessed with watching movies and watching TV shows. My mom would buy me all the movies that I wanted on VHS tapes I'd wear the tape out, you know, the magnetic strip on the VHS tape. My mom would have to buy me a second copy sometimes of certain movies and I'd memorize all the lines. And first I wanted to be an actor and I performed in quite a few. I'm from Miami, of course. And so we're Spanish down here. I'm Colombian Cuban. So there's a lot of soap operas that are filmed over here with Telemundo and Univision. And I acted in a few of those. But I decided at some point that I liked telling stories. I liked to be the one behind the camera speaking through the lens and not in front of the lens. And, you know, I was also the typical young kid that liked to, you know, take his parents' camcorder and use it for my own things. I would do like short films with my friends and I would do music videos for my buddies. And it was like as a young teenager. So I've had the passion. I'm very lucky in that regard. I know a lot of people spend sometimes, you know, decades trying to figure out what they really want to do. But I was lucky. I kind of knew since a very young age that I wanted to be involved in filmmaking and making movies, whether that be in front or behind the camera. I wasn't 100% sure about that aspect, but I knew I wanted to do something about this thing that we're doing now.
Well, so a soap opera actor to a horror director, that's pretty, that's a big journey. Who got you your first camera, or did you save up and buy it for yourself?
My very, very, very first camera was actually a web camera that my mom bought me. You remember those old compact computers like from the late 90s or whatever? They used to come with a web camera and I used that to record like little movies that I would do with my friends. And they actually had a stop motion animation feature and I would get clay figures and I would make them dance like to the Backstreet Boys songs or the NSYNC songs, you know, like frame by frame and then moving them. So that was really my first camera. And then like when I was like 13 or 14, my parents got me like a camcorder and then I still have it, but I don't know if it works anymore. And also I don't want to see the terrible videos that used to mean, just the quality was just horrible.
That's a gateway into what most filmmakers do. You know, they start with these small camcorders and film whatever they want to film, whether they're good or bad. That's the way of learning to getting to where you want to be.
Agreed. No, definitely. I definitely took that path unknowingly. I just was attracted to it, and I wanted to play around with the camera. It was just like symbiotic, really. It was natural. It wasn't forced at all. It was quite natural.
With the welder, is there a cameo from you in the movie I might have missed?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. Before The Welder, and all the short films I've done before, because, you know, The Welder is my freshman film. It's my first feature film I've done, one of hopefully many to come, but this is my first one. But before that, I would always try to make a cameo, whether that be just like a hand, like a close up of a hand. And so I wanted to bring that into my feature. So the only thing that I did was, there's a shot where you see a radio. Right. And a hand comes in and flips the dial. That was my hand. That's it.
That's
it's kind of hard to be in the movie when you're actually, because I directed, but I also did the cinematography. Yeah. So I was behind the camera too. So I would have had to flip it on myself.
Look, was it hard to, I want to get into the basis of the story in a minute, but being a cinematographer and writing and directing, is that make it more challenging? And you just want to be there and get it done? Or do people sort of react differently and go, right, well, we're going to listen to everything you've got to say?
You know, I'm not a tyrant on set. Even though I was wearing a lot of hats, I'm very receptive to feedback. I like to hear, you know, I feel like this is a collaborative sport. You know, this isn't boxing or tennis or anything. This is like football, where you have a big team and you have to work together to make it happen. And so although I was wearing multiple hats and it was difficult, of course, juggling all of that, having to work with the actors, having to hold like the physical, when you're filming 18 hours a day, because we filmed this in 9 days. So like, in the heat of Miami, 100% humidity, holding this like 50-pound camera the whole time. And then working with the actors, it's really takes a toll on you physically and mentally. But also, I guess going back to that, the question, I think that you can't just expect, you're not God on set, at least for me. Like I'm not the kind of director where I want everything exactly the way I believe in hearing out the actors, hearing out the crew, seeing what they got to say, because I know I don't have all the answers. And on an indie set, that's important, I believe.
9 days too, carrying a camera around, directing cast, you in hot locations. Tell me about that. Was it did you plan everything out? Were there storyboards? Did it just flow? Did you come in on time, come in on budget? Tell me the details.
oh, Shane, let me tell you, though, so many things happened even just before production, right? So I'll tell you just a few highlighted.
Yes.
3 days before production, we got our car robbed. We got like the stuff inside of our car, like, which we had a bunch of gear in there that we were going to use for the production. So we had to last minute purchase a bunch of gear, which obviously that means that we went a little bit over budget, because that, you know, we had to replace the gear. We had to do it. 2 days before the production, one of our main cast gets arrested by the police a reason that was not like real. Like, it was, you know, I want to say who, but it was out of nowhere. And the morning of, the van that had all the gear wouldn't start. We had to unload the van and put it into three different cars to drive it down to the location, which is about 45 minutes south of Miami.
Right.
And so just those kinds of things started to pile up, and we're like questioning, like, are we supposed to, what's going on? Like, are we supposed to make this movie? Because planning wise, we had it all planned out. You know, we had a shot list. We had a breakdown schedule.
Yep.
I don't really like to work with super detailed storyboards because I find them a little bit limiting, especially when you have such a short amount of time. You have to sort of be very flexible when it comes to your shot composition and shot selection. But beyond that, I mean, this script had like 20 revisions. We had a lot of planning going into this. We knew what we were going to shoot, when we were going to shoot it. But we had, in order to shoot a film in that short amount of time, you have to have a good amount of planning.
Oh, yeah. And the movie gods were against you, obviously.
I think that sometimes those are the best productions. I heard something like Sylvester Stallone said something like, whenever he's on a shoot that goes perfect, he's scared because that movie usually does bad. Right. But whenever he's on a shoot where everything went bad, he leaves the production with a smile on his face because he knows it's going to be good. Yeah. And I think that, short of somebody getting like struck by lightning, everything else bad that could happen to us.
The Texas Chainsaw Massacre to me is pretty much a perfect movie, but they had everything go wrong on that set too. Like the making of is outstanding, and how they got that made is amazing, and nobody died.
Absolutely. And you know, they I saw that, and a lot of people were telling me like, oh, your story is so similar to Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
That's why I'm bringing it up.
Yeah. And I'm like, wow. And then that's when I looked into it and I saw it and I was like, wow, it is crazy. And so you just can't, like, I took every obstacle as like a challenge from the universe saying, do you really want to make this movie? And I said, yes, I do.
I'm really glad you did. I've got to be honest, it surprised me how much I was engaged and really loved the film and the performances. Were there any gators? Any random gators? Was that something else you had to watch out for? Again, I keep diverting going on to the actors in the movie itself, but I'm intrigued. You must have got attacked by gators at some the locations were so natural. Yeah.
Well, you guys have crocodiles over in Australia. We have alligators. And we were filming right in very close to the Everglades, like a little bit to the east of the Everglades, right? You had to fake it a little bit, but a lot of the scenery shots with the drone and stuff, that was all shot in the Everglades. There was this one day we were doing a drone shot and we have the drone like 1,000 feet in the air. If you want to get a nice wide shot,
of course.
Yes. And I start hearing this like, and I know that's the sound of an alligator nearby. And I'm like, oh, so I'm trying to get the drone to come down and I can't see, I hear the alligator, but I don't know where it is. And so I'm just trying to get the thing down as quickly as possible. And after like what seemed like an eternity, I was able to land it. And I left before the alligator decided to manifest, but I didn't see it. I heard it. He warned me and I took his warning and ran out of there.
Yeah, we got big crocodiles, boxing kangaroos, all those kind of things.
Yeah, great white sharks. I mean, you guys live in paradise over there.
yeah, that's it. And I'm a surfer, so I'm quite aware of the sharks as well.
Ever see any sharks out there while you're surfing?
I have, but not recently. Usually you can tell because there's rustling in the water or there's birds. And you know where there's a big flock of birds, there's going to be sharks. Also, I've seen them come under me, but they usually just keep going because I surf on quite a lot of reefs. But, you know, you're with other surfers. People are looking out. So far, so good. I have all my limbs. So
thank God. Man. Yeah. Yes. You need those. You need those if you want to keep surfing. And do you live in Sydney?
I live on the Central Coast, which is about an hour north of Sydney. Most of my media commitments and things are in Sydney, but I'm just up north on the coast and it's just far enough away from the city to be, you know, on a nice little quiet area. So I like it.
Lovely, man. Lovely. I got to go visit Australia one day. It's just a little bit of a far flight, but I hear it's just gorgeous and the food is delicious and the scenery's.
Yeah,
man.
Well, I'm I'm about, you know, 18 hours ahead of you at the moment. So yeah, the flight is a long time.
Yeah, definitely. It's almost 7 o'clock in the afternoon. And you were telling me it's like like 11 in the morning almost for you,
right? Yeah, almost 11 a.m. So yeah, that's big difference.
Quite a jump, yeah.
You'll have to come down under though, because there's a lot of filmmaking, a lot of really good sets, locations, crew. So yeah, maybe.
I've heard. Yeah, I've heard, and there's a lot of good productions coming out of Australia right now.
That's correct. Not just Sydney either, up in Queensland, over in Perth, you know, they film everywhere in Melbourne, which is really good. Now,
well, I heard they shot that movie Elvis out there.
Yeah, that was filmed all in Australia, up in Queensland. That was the movie that Tom Hanks got COVID on. So
yes,
that made news at the time. And yeah, Australian crew, a lot of Australian cast. But yes, Elvis.
It's crazy how you guys can change your accent from the Australian to, like, just going to the Elvis.
Mm.
Those actors, I think the dad, the guy that plays Elvis's dad, and the girl that plays Priscilla, yeah, and I think Australian. Even the mom, I think they're all Australian, and they have like these Southern American accents, and you couldn't even tell. I had somebody told me that movie was shot in. I mean, I know Laz Berman is from over there.
Baz Luhrmann.
Baz Luhrmann. Oh, I got his name mixed up. My bad. I hope he's not watching this.
I've interviewed him a few times, and he's a lovely bloke. He wouldn't mind you saying.
Okay, this, good, I'm good, sure. Good.
But yeah, quickly on Olivia De Jong, who played Priscilla, she's done mostly American films. So a lot of people don't even realize she is Australian, because just about 85-90% of her career so far has been US films. She went over there very young. The Aussies can perfect a very good American accent. It's sometimes the other way around. If an American tries to do or a Canadian do a Australian accent, that doesn't always work.
It doesn't translate well. Yeah. It's weird. Like the British and the Australian people can really do American accents well, but the Americans, not so well the other way around.
No, that's not always the case, but yeah, quite a lot, unfortunately.
I'm hoping that Austin Butler wins the Oscar for Elvis, because I thought his performance was phenomenal.
He has been my pick from pretty much day one. And when he won the Golden Globe, I thought he's on his way. But it's very tough. Brendan Fraser was brilliant too.
He did phenomenal. I literally just saw The Whale yesterday for the first time.
Yeah.
And I was blown away.
Yeah.
And his performance was just out of this world. And so then now I'm like, because when I saw Elvis last year, I told my wife, I told her, this guy might win the Oscar. That was correct. But then I saw, Brendan Fraser, and I'm like, I don't know who to pick now.
Well, Colin Farrell's really good in The Banshees of Inisherin.
I haven't seen that one yet. I'm going to watch that tonight.
Yeah, he's a good actor, but it's a career-defining performance. And without giving it away, he has a scene where he cries in it. It'll just break you down. It's so good. So enjoy if you can. But
it's on the list. I can't wait. I can't wait to watch it. Yeah.
But back to The Welder just for a few minutes.
sure. We got off track.
That's cool.
You're such a great conversationalist, man. I got off track. I didn't even notice.
Well, you're a very interesting man as well. And I love talking to you. So it's good.
Very simpatico here.
With The Welder, you're casting, I mean, especially Ro and Camila. Tell me how you found them. Have you worked with them before? Or did you audition them? Because they were pretty solid leads, I got to say.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. And, you know, with Ro, I worked with him on several short films prior to The Welder.
Okay.
And I just thought he's so natural. He's so cool to work with. I like to work with people that are humble, that are cool, not like these huge egos, because, you know, on indie productions, there's no time for an ego. We just got to go. If we got to get dirty, we got to get dirty. And if we're going to get sweaty, we're going to get sweaty, and we're going to film it, and we're going to do it. And so Ro, I knew him. As a matter of fact, you know, the character's name is Ro, and name is Ro. I wrote the script with him in mind, with his name and everything. But Camila was a different story. We were looking for Camila, for a long time, right? And then one day, it's the Miami International Film Festival, and me and a couple other buddies of mine, filmmaking buddies, we go to watch a film called Hurricane.
Yep.
And there she is. She doesn't have a huge role in this movie, but there's no such thing as a small actor. you know, small role. Actors are like, she lit up this role. And I was like, wow, who is that girl? She is the person that I like to audition for the welder. And so after the film, we start, you know, chatting and we start like finding out who made the film, and we got her name and we sort of stalked her on Instagram and found her. And we sent her an invitation to audition.
Yep.
And we, you know, we sent invitations out to other people, but she was our primo pick. That's who we wanted. We just didn't know her availability. We didn't know if she would like the character. We didn't know anything. But once she comes in, she came prepared. She had a binder with notes. She had like cutouts of like army stuff because, you know, she's in the army in the movie.
That's right, yeah.
She came so prepared, and I'm like, wow.
She's thought about it before she even got there.
She wanted to do it, and I could tell, and I wanted her to do it. So that's the way kind of like it played out. And I wish that we would have found her sooner, because it would have saved me a lot of grief and stress. But hey, it worked out.
Well, yeah, I was wondering what you said to her, especially the opening scenes, because she's running, she's sleepwalking, which is part of the plot. She's screaming, there's saliva coming out of her mouth. That's the editing. Yeah. Cool. The editing is very, very well done too. But did you have to say anything to her? Because it looked like she was really breaking down. That acting was terrific.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that was actually the first scene that we shot in the movie. As a matter of fact, so that scene is intercut. It's basically two scenes, right? Where she's running through the forest, like as she's exercising, doing her army stuff.
Yep.
And then simultaneously cut with her waking up out of bed and sleepwalking.
Yep.
So the sleepwalking was shot on the last day,
right?
And the running through the forest and stuff, that was shot on the first day. And so it's hard for an actor who is literally just beginning to play the role of this character for the very first scene to be such an emotional one. But we needed to do it for scheduling reasons. And
powerful.
Yeah. So I basically was just telling her, remember, this is going to be part of the climax of the scene, and you are without like giving out any spoilers, you are facing an extremely traumatic event. Mm. And we spoke about it for a long time, and then she goes away. She went away. She puts on her earphones and she listens to whatever music she listens to. It's, you know, she doesn't tell me. You might have to ask her
I'll be asking, yes.
And then she really just zones in and gets into the moment. And then she comes back and we're ready. She's like, let's go. And I'm like, let's go. And that's kind of like how we did it.
That's so good. I mean, some of the best performances I've ever seen, and I've watched in my career a lot of movies, being a film journalist and movie analyst.
Sure.
But some of the best performances you've ever seen are little ones like that in micro budget films. And head and shoulders, I thought Camila was. Well done. I hope you work with her again. I'm sure that.
Oh, me too. I hope she wants to work with me again. Nah, of course, we will. We already have her in mind for the next project that we want to do and everything.
Well, we can mention spoilers if you like, because I would hope people have seen the film by the time they get to watch.
Fair enough. True. True. Yeah, the film is out. People can watch it.
Yeah. And by the time you are listening or watching this, I hope that everyone's seen it, because I'm highly recommending it. But I was shocked, and I said this to you off air, how it ended. Elisa, I'm saying her name right, not Eliza. Elisa.
It's Elisa.
I love that. I love that. That's why I wanted to make a point of saying that. She puts the welder's hat or mask on at the end. Didn't see that coming. Was this? I know you said there was a lot of rewrites. Was it always going to end this way or how?
Okay, so the ending was very important, and it's a very controversial ending.
Mm.
Some people were really against this. Okay. Some people wanted it to be more of a happy ending or whatever. I'm a fan of leaving a lot of loose ends open, a lot of questions. I want people to ask questions.
Yeah.
And I think, like, from my perspective, this was the only logical ending that made sense to me as the co-writer and director. Why?
Yeah.
This is a woman that's gone through an immense amount of stress. And she was on the borderline between sanity and insanity. And this new traumatic event of having her, well, I guess we're talking spoilers here, so who cares, right?
Yep.
Of having her vacation supposed to be a relaxing event turn so drastically and become basically the most harrowing, most stressful moment of her life. Her
incarcerated.
Boyfriend. Yeah. She's fearing for her life. She's not able to communicate with the world. Her boyfriend is kidnapped and his leg is chopped off. I mean, for goodness gracious, she is now pushed over. And the only way that she can fathom in her mind to help her boyfriend, whom she loves, is to don the welder's mask. Whether that is right or wrong, she doesn't care, because it's not about that. It's about her love and helping him and helping him to survive. So I think that, it's a very controversial, because I mean, it can be interpreted in so many different ways. Like, oh, what are you trying to say? Are you trying to say that racism is not bad? Or like, no, or is it like, some people have said the most off the wall comments. At the end of the day, what she's trying to do is save the love of her life.
That's it. That's what it boils
down to. By any means necessary.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you said that, because that's sort of basically how I saw it, but I still didn't expect it. So I was quite surprised. And
that's good.
Elisa was like a action star in a horror movie as well. Yes. Because, you know, she had the gun. She was basically rounding up troops, and her decisions were getting made at the same time. What's going to happen next? And all the diversions of those creepy people around her. So, I mean, for nine days, I think you've got like a little mini masterpiece here. I hope a lot of people take notice of it for you.
Wow, Shane, that is literally like, you're blowing up my head here, man. You know, us filmmakers, we are literally the most insecure people, at least I'm speaking for myself. So to get validation like that from you, Shane, it fills my heart. I really do appreciate it. You know, we put the best that we could into this film. It was low budget, short amount of time. And in Spanish, we say we want something to be bueno, bonito y barato. We want it to be good. We want it to be done at a low cost, and we want it to be done quickly. and that's what we kind of tried to do here. And because we it was just a necessity. We had to adapt, and we wanted the film to be made by any means necessary, just like Camila or Elisa wanted her love to survive by any means necessary. A lot of parallels with the story and the behind the scenes when we analyze it, really.
Yeah, well, congratulations. I hope a lot of people get to watch
it.
Any Latino Spanish filmmakers, actors that you've always looked up to, maybe someone you'd like to work with someday? There's probably a long list.
Oh man, so many. Right now I really like Pedro Pascal. You know, he seems like so cool too, right? Like he's in The Last of Us TV show right now, and I think he's just so phenomenal and in so many ways. And
Mandalorian just started again.
Oh yeah, exactly. I mean, well, he's just so up there. Like if I even get to meet him one day, it would be just an honor. but yeah, man, I want to work with I like to work with diverse diversity, but talent. I want people that are passionate about filmmaking. Yep. And of course I want to put in Latino representation into my films, because I'm Latino and that's who I know. Those are the stories that I know. But I love all people. I love Black people. I love white people. I want everyone to work with me. I want to work with everybody. Everybody come to me. Let's work. Let's do something.
That's good. As you were starting out doing your short films, trying to have meetings, I guess, with producers and things, were you ever finding it difficult because of your heritage, or did you have no problems whatsoever?
Well, I've been doing most of this in Miami.
Yeah.
Where everybody, not everybody, but a lot of people are Spanish down here. Yes. So I've never, in the filmmaking world, at least not to my face, I've never been discriminated. against. I was discriminated against one time for a project that I worked on. I worked on a kind of like a documentary that was about transgender people and like their stories, how they came up and stuff like that. And I one time I was discriminated on another project for having worked on that one.
But to me,
I'm the kind of person that I like to work on all kinds of projects. And it's, you know, to be discriminated against because you did, you know, a certain project, I think, exactly, is kind of silly and ridiculous. And but for being Latino, not yet, at least.
Good. Thank goodness for that. I mean, there's so many for me too, but Pedro Almodovar, I always probably butcher his name, but his combination with Antonio and Penelope Cruz,
yeah.
Antonio
Bender, oh yeah,
I've just, you know, through 30 odd years, three decades,
yeah,
more, has been outstanding. So
I love Antonio Banderas too. He's so good. And now that for some reason, he's like wine. He's just been getting better as he's gotten older. And like now he has like this gritty look. I really want to see him in something gritty. Like, he's always been like the super macho, good looking guy. Let's make him like this gritty. I love him. I think he's fantastic.
Very much so. Yeah. So last couple of questions before we wrap up. Can you surf?
You know, I can't surf. I can't skateboard, but I can rollerblade. Miami's not the best for surfing. We have very little waves.
What about cooking? Can you cook?
Oh man, I can cook a mean burger. If you want a good burger, you come to me. Now I can't cook anything too fancy. I can't, you know, I'm not a chef or anything. I can survive in the kitchen, but the burger, it's kind of easy. You know, anybody would say, oh, anybody can cook a burger, but that's kind of like my forte. That's my go-to. And my wife tells me they're good. I'm going to believe her.
And what secret passions do you have other than, you know, acting and directing outside of filmmaking? Are there anything that you do? Hobbies and things.
I love going to the gym. Check me out. Look. Oh,
very good. Bigger than mine. Trust me.
Yeah. I just been working out since I was like 12 years old, and it's nice to keep in shape, especially when you have to carry heavy equipment. I feel like keeping in shape is very, very pivotal to my shot composition, being able to hold the shot for a long period of time. If my fitness wasn't up to par, I don't think I'd be able to do what I do at the level that I do it. So even though it's a hobby separate from filmmaking, it helps me in my filmmaking.
Well, it's quite noticeable, the shots during the dinner scene as well, you know, the movement of the camera and everything, that really awkward dinner scene that Ro Camilla had.
Such a strange scene, right? I love it though.
Oh yeah. Like this whole movie it surprised me. Like I said, I was really stoked. It was great. But I don't want to overflow you with too many compliments. You'll explode.
My head.
do you have a director's chair with your name on it?
I do. It's in the other room. It was a gift. It was a gift from one of my buddies for my birthday a few years ago. And now it's a decorative piece unless I go out on a production. I gotta give a lot of thanks to my buddy King Shun for getting that for me.
That's very cool. Will we see a Welder Volume 2?
Ooh, that's a good question. This is my answer to that. We have the sequel completely outlined. We know exactly what will happen. And we think it's even better than the first one. It's one of those rare cases where the sequel might even be better than the first. However, there needs to be a need for it. We need to get the film out there. And if supply and demand, if there's a demand, we will supply it. In the meantime, we're working on another film unrelated to The Welder, but we are ready to pull the trigger on the sequel if there's a demand.
Well, there could be like this Welder universe, you know, like different welders in different states, and then, you know, they get together for one big.
Hey, we got to talk about this behind the scenes. I like this idea. I like this, Shane. All right, I'm going to give you writing credits.
Oh, I'd like that. Final question. For people who are deciding what movie to watch and they're flicking through thumbnails on, you know, streaming services, why should people pick The Welder, in your opinion?
People should pick The Welder because they're going to get a horror film that is very different from what they're used to. It's filled with twists and turns. It has a slow burn that builds and builds the anxiety. If you have anxiety disorder, maybe you should watch this film. Exactly. It's going to exacerbate it. And it has just like this twist ending that'll keep you thinking and keep you. It's one of those films that after you finish watching it, you want to have a conversation about it. Like, what did this mean? What did you think about that? Why do you think it took that turn? Did you expect that turn? And I think most people will say no. And I'm a sucker for a good twist. I sure am. I'm an M. Night Shyamalan fan.
Yeah.
So a good twist, I'm all for it.
Yeah, well, the music was effective. I think that helps the situation at times. And then you've got the action, smallish. They're very small, but there's some action sequences. And
sure.
Yeah. Well done.
James Hall did the music. He's from London. Yeah. He did such an amazing job. Not only did he do the music, listen to this guy. He did the music. He did the sound effects. He cleaned up the dialogue.
Wow.
He cleaned up the ADR. I mean, this guy is a magician of sound. And I think the sound is one of the strongest attributes of the film.
Definitely. The sound combines in that opening scene I was telling you about, with the acting and the rain and then the running and the footsteps and everything else. So yeah, no, the music, and didn't realize he also did the sound and everything.
He is quite so talented. James Haw, shout out to James Haw. All the filmmakers out there that need a good composer and sound mixer and engineer, look him up. He's on Instagram.
David, Liz, it's been a pleasure, mate. And I know we were, you know, for the listeners and the watchers out there, this was supposed to be an interview with Camilla, but she's very busy for a very important reason, right?
Yes, yes. She's very busy right now, but she's going to be on the show next time.
Yeah.
And I do appreciate you hosting me unexpectedly. I know this was a surprise. But thank you so much for being so gracious, for being so such a fan of the film. I appreciate that. My heart is filled after this convo, and I really do appreciate it.
Before I stop recording, I will say that entire interview was unscripted. I was just asking questions off the top of my head because I didn't know I was going to talk to you.
Yeah. Well, you would have been a freestyle rapper in another life because that was so smooth. That was like butter.
Well, I don't know if I'd be any good. You know, I've seen 8 Mile. I thought Eminem was good at that. But no.
Yeah, I'll do a beat.
He happened again last night.
Oh, sweetie, don't tell me you were sleepwalking again.
It's becoming more intense.
You need to find a healthy way to de-stress. Because if you don't, you're not going to like who you become.
See this badass ranch online? A little stress-free activity. And if you decide you don't want to come, that's fine, because I'm just going to take your mom with me instead. Solo time with your suegra.
Is this guy looking at us?
Do a lot of people go missing around here?
I mean, there's more cows than people out here. So if one person goes missing, everybody freaks out.
This house has a history, man.
Someone was killed here?
We don't take too kindly to your type sort of things.
I've been guilty of many sins, but I found a way to cure the blight of racial hate.
Good morning.
Lovely to meet you. I'm William Godwin.
Done.
Yes, doctor.
And what's up with Mr. Godwin anyway? That's a strange dude.
Mr. Godwin was a good doctor.
There's somebody behind that door.
Radiation will be from everywhere and from nowhere.
You're just going to be perfect for my little experiment.
I need your body parts.
Start the preparations.
Oh, my God.
Well, there we go. The Welder. That was like the trailer, but you know, that is a independently cut trailer. And it was okay. I would say it was okay. Anyway, if you're looking to watch the movie, please do it, okay? Even if you're thinking a little bit, I might like it, I might not like it, you will like it, all right? Check it out on Tubi. And, yeah, thank you very much for listening to me. My name is Shane A. Bassett, your host, the movie analyst. Thank you for joining me on Cine Critique. Tune in again when you can. Until next time, see you at the movies. Bye.